I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair, and
my knee hurts.
My arms are kind of rash. Is that a rash? And I had Asian food, and that makes me feel kind of sick. I might be lactose intolerant.
Welcome back to Definitely Dying, our friends and listeners, who are also our friends.
Yeah.
We really like you guys. If you didn't listen, it would be really irrelevant for us to do this podcast every week. So thanks for being a pal.
Yeah.
How you doing, Madeline?
I'm good. I have the sniffles, but as you reassured me that it's probably just allergies because of all the rain, so I'm not terrified.
Yeah, we've had a lot of rain lately. It made our city really green. It's really nice.
It's so nice.
It's very beautiful.
I'm really trying not, like, I'll complain about anything. I just love to complain. And I've been making a very concerted effort not to complain about the rain because, like, we need it so bad.
Yeah,
I don't want to tell the universe that I don't like it because I love it.
No. When it rains, it pours here.
Yeah,
it's unlike things I've experienced. Like the level of like flooding. Like sometimes, like I'll drive a few miles from my house, and like you know, I'll go to the gym, say for instance, for an hour.
Yeah.
While it's raining, and by the time I leave the gym, the freeway by my house will be closed down for flooding.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's like a legit possibility.
Have you noticed? You haven't been to LA Fitness El Centro in a while.
Oh, my home and native land.
There's some leaks. There's some big leaks at LA Fitness El Centro at the moment.
There's been a leak at the place where I teach my pilot writing class the last 2 weeks as well.
LA is a city that's built like everybody only planned to be here for 5 years.
Yeah, totally.
The city is just like permeated by this feeling that someone was like, I'll live here for 5 years, I'll get rich, and then I'll go build a mansion somewhere else.
Yeah.
But then it didn't happen, and now everybody just lives in a house with a leak.
It happened for like three people. They're all like actors from the original Star Wars.
Yeah.
And they all moved to Wyoming together. And but otherwise, it turned out that we were stuck here in this desert.
Yes.
There's no one's out there. We could film for days.
Yeah.
And we could live our whole lives here. And then all of a sudden, around this time of year, at least we were led to believe it was always going to rain like it's raining now.
Yeah.
And then Madeline and I both arrived here, I think around a little over 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And upon arriving, the drought came with us.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I would say this year was the first real rain that we've had in, what, like 5 or 6 years,
yeah,
something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
So speaking of, it's been raining like crazy and the people are terrible drivers.
Yeah, did you get your car? So you got in a car accident.
Yeah, I got into a car accident.
Was it
from
while it was raining?
I don't remember, but I'm going to blame the rain.
Yeah, let's blame, yeah.
Yeah, me and a friend of the podcast, Tim Kalpakis, was with me. We were driving to go get some hot chicken. They've got this.
Howlin'. Were you going to Howlin' Ray's?
Yep, Howlin' Ray's.
Did you get?
Yeah, we still went. Yeah.
At post car accident.
Do I look like a guy who lets a Toyota truck get in the way of some hot chicken? No, I do not. We got that hot chicken from Howlin' Ray's, and then now I'm in a rental car. I'm driving a Toyota Camry, all of your mothers.
What happened in the actual accident?
So a guy from Fresno. He was out of his sorts. He was driving down the road.
Uh-huh.
He suddenly realized he had to make a right turn, but I was in the right lane and he was on the left. That didn't stop him. And so he just hard turned right into me. And I'll say this doesn't have anything to do with health or hypochondria, but when I bought my Subaru Impreza a couple of years back, I was told that it had the highest resale value for the simple reason that it was the best car for absorbing impact. And I was essentially T-boned.
Yeah.
And not a scratch on me, which either means that they were right about those cars or I'm unbreakable. And Subaru, strangely, is claiming the latter. They're claiming it had nothing to do with their automobile. It's that your boy can't be touched. Come for me.
This is the your other. You got your Subaru because you got in an accident in your previous car, right?
And then in 2016, my Subaru was hit 6 times within the first 3 months of the year, simply because it's the same color as nighttime. It just like it would get dark. People would go to like parallel park, and then they would just like run into me. And only 2 of the times was I actually in the car when it got hit.
Yeah.
Both times by people that were driving themselves to the hospital.
What?
Yeah, one time by someone who was going to get a cancerous melanoma removed, and the second time by a guy who actually had parts of a 2x4 sticking out of his chest.
What?
Yeah.
And he was driving?
He was driving himself to the hospital. He was I can't think of what the term is. He was don't listen to this, Donald Trump. Not a legal citizen of our fair country.
Yeah.
He was. There are these people who work who hang out outside of Home Depot for laborers.
Yeah,
day laborers.
For sure.
He was a day laborer and he had been injured on the job and he doesn't have insurance because he's not from this country. He really didn't have any money. And the pain was so great that he passed out at the wheel and just rolled out of the parking lot at Home Depot right into my car and actually hit me in literally the exact same spot that the woman who had a cancerous melanoma removed hit me. And I promptly called her after to tell her how strange it was that this whole thing had happened. And she didn't remember that I existed. So
wait,
I
did
guess
you really
I wasn't,
call her?
Yeah, I definitely called.
Yeah.
I didn't call. I texted her.
Oh, yeah.
And she didn't remember me. Which is a sign
she
that
didn't remember a person who she'd hit their car.
Yeah, it was. It made me question.
Are you
letting
an
her
angel?
Off, yeah, it's possible. It's, or
I
the
feel
devil.
Like, no, I feel like the most likely explanation for all of this is you're some kind of angel,
maybe.
And you. Your people crash into you when they need a little angel help.
I mean, I do from time to time have that feeling that like, what if I'm dead and that's why no one is aware of me?
But I'm aware of you.
Maybe you're dead.
Oh no!
Definitely.
Let's start the show.
Yeah, we better get somebody in here to make sure that we're alive.
Zig, are we alive?
I think you're both alive.
All right, cool.
Okay. Great.
Wait, Zig, are you alive? Oh no!
Oh no!
If you were ever inside of this our recording studio, it looks
like
a little bit
a
like
a place for dead people.
Yeah. People won't be dead.
Yeah.
Well, if we're still alive, we'll see. We'll see you in a few.
See you in a few. An awesome guest today. You're really gonna like him, I promise. You have seen him on a bunch of shows. You've seen him on Parks and Rec, on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. You can see him every Saturday at 7 at the UCB stage, performing with his legendary improv team, Sentimental Lady. Most recently, he was a writer on the show The Arrangement, which premieres in March on E! Check it out. But before you check it out, check him out. Ismael Cowan.
What a segue.
Let me just take a
it's
second.
The
to,
best segue yep. I've ever mm-hmm. had from an intro.
Before you check that out,
check him out.
It just, it was just smooth and natural and organic. That's what I liked about it.
Ever since the Women's March, Madeline's been objectifying our male guests that way.
Just check him out.
Check him out. Mel, do you want to describe for our listeners what you look like?
I look like a human apology.
What an inaccurate but very funny description. That would be how you would introduce yourself. I feel like a lot of stand-ups like to start with a self-deprecating bit about how they look.
Sure.
You just got yours.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good, good. Yeah. Does that mean I'm a stand-up now?
I think it means you're a stand-up now.
As well as a professional podcaster. So, Mel.
Come on down to the Chuckle Hut or wherever the fuck people watch
yeah,
stand-up.
That's right. You got it.
Mel, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think about death?
This is an interesting question, and it's one that I was thinking about it because I'm a fan of the podcast, and I've heard a lot of other people's answers about this. Have people distinguished, and how do you feel about the distinguishing mm-hmm. between a scale of 1 to 10 thinking about death versus thinking about dying?
Ooh.
I think we sort of the way we view it, it's like, if you're thinking about death in any of its many forms, like it could be your death, it could be someone else's death, it could be dying, it could be like just the concept of death, I think you're thinking about death.
Yeah, but people have not made that distinction a lot, like people being fearful of dying as opposed to not, you know, as just opposed to being fearful being of like not
of
existing.
Not existing.
Yeah.
And so with that in mind, I think about dying far more often than I think about death.
Okay.
Interesting.
And actually the concept of death and the afterlife, I'm fairly ambivalent on. Like the closest thing I can say to like, oh, I have like religious beliefs is like, I believe in the nitrogen cycle. You know?
Right. What is that?
Well, it's just like, it's the, your body is going to break down.
Yeah.
But there's actually, and I'm not a scientist, so I'll butcher it, but the idea of your cells breaking down and theoretically those things that are in you becoming part of the nature and the environment again. And depending, it doesn't matter what you do. Like if you dump yourself in the ocean or cremate, it, like technically you're breaking down and becoming part of the world again, I think, in a different way.
Sure.
Which I think so.
You like that?
I kind of like that.
Yeah, I think that's nice.
I think that's kind of a nice way to, possibly very inaccurate way to think about it. But so consequently, the death part of it doesn't bug me too much.
Right, right.
I do think about like my dog being dead like people I like being dead, and that's a bummer.
Yes.
But me being dead, I kind of don't give a shit. But dying all the time. I'm constantly worried about the very real probability that I will probably live a decent amount of time.
Yeah.
And a chunk there at the end is gonna suck.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
That's what bugs me. I'm very worried about like senility and dementia and all that shit. Mm. So it's the stuff at the end that
like
bugs me.
And the inevitable stuff at the end. Not the like it's a possibility that you'll get this terrible disease. Like the parts that we're all our bodies the nitrogen like our bodies are going to start to they already have. I mean they start to break down I think at like 25 or whatever.
Oh,
that's when you stop
you know breaking down.
Right now. We all are.
If you could see me, like I'm slowly just barely imperceptibly, but if you could really hone in, you would see my body disintegrating in this moment right now. I don't feel good, guys. I think it is just that like kind of boring workaday stuff that you can't.
Yeah.
You is going to happen.
Yeah.
Like old age sounds bad.
Too. Yeah. Old age sounds tough, or at least enough of it that is my
But we're not allowed to say that we don't want to get old and die. Like I think it's insulting to everyone who's ever been sick and died young that we would ever say like, oh yeah, no, I feel like just kicking the bucket around 50 when like, you know, I think all my fun has been had. Like people don't want to hear that from you, but I think it's a legit thought.
Yeah.
And honestly, I've had that thought and said that thought enough that I think I'm going to stop saying it because I think people are like, hey, maybe shut the fuck up, man.
Yeah.
Because I have legitimately made the joke. It was like, okay, like past 40.
Yeah.
What the fuck am I
going to
do?
Yeah.
Like legitimately, how much am I going to contribute? What if someone I was just like, hey, having a great day, turned 40, hit by a bus. We're done. But you're absolutely right. Like that is kind of shitty to people who didn't want to die young and did die young.
And I guess, you know, theoretically, at least, unless things go like horribly bad at late 39, most people hit 40 and then they're like, I think I want to keep living. But like it's this idea of a hump that
crazy young.
Yeah, I'm going to be 40 this year.
Your life's not going to get any better.
I'm actually planning a bus accident for my 40th birthday this year.
Man,
that's nice.
No,
I think it'll be nice.
When do you turn 40?
May.
Oh, okay. So I'm October. Do you want to stick around till like October and then we can just kind of like get a twofer?
At the very least, we could split the difference and do an August thing together.
Yeah.
I mean, because by August, I'll know if it's even worth it for you to make
fair,
it.
Fair.
Yeah, yeah.
Fair.
And it's like kind of nice to have like a joint birthday suicide because it's like
nice.
If people, like if you're worried people won't be sad about you, you know, at least cumulatively they'll be like sad about the both of
you.
Well,
and also, I mean, we want people to come to it, right?
Yeah, no, definitely.
It's like a birthday party you want to invite people to, but you're going to say like, hey, at this intersection, friction of, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Probably right here.
Yeah. Or, yeah, like Sunset and Western would probably be a pretty decent place to do it. Yeah.
You wouldn't even have to time it. Like,
no,
I think
no.
They'd
what
abide.
What a cruel thing to do so guys, to all of your friends.
Hashtag us if you want to RSVP to mine and Mel's birthday suicide bus. Yeah.
Bus birthday hashtag. Bus birthday.
Bus birthday death.
Yeah.
Bus birthday bye. I don't know.
There it is.
We'll work on it.
Hashtag bus birthday
bye. Bye.
Okay, yeah, let's throw a bye bye on it. Bus birthday bye bye.
Yeah, quadruple B there.
There we go.
Bus birthday bye bye. I think I'm going to love the end of my life, like the last, like, 10 years.
I agree.
Because I feel like every time.
I agree
time,
about you because you're a delight as a person.
Well, and super old already.
Yes, I've been truly an old lady inside for my whole damn life. But like also I feel like every job, like every time I've like had a job or like lived somewhere, I feel like when I know the time that I'm leaving, it's like always when I have the most fun. Like, you know, like when I like had like the very end of college, I was like so relaxed because I was like, oh, I'm doing is like, you know, crossing my T's and dotting my I's until I graduate. And I like wasn't so like anxious and hung up about like making the most out of everything because I was like, hey, I know May, this is over. I can't do everything. I just gotta like kick it with the people I like and like say hey to the professors I like and do all the, let's be honest, all the work and the applications I'm doing. So I feel like I will get relaxed as fuck when I'm about 75 to 80.
The difference, the slight difference between senior ditch week, which you're describing, is you're either 18 or 22 at that point.
Yeah.
Add 60, maybe 70 years to that. And again, the aforementioned like bodily disintegration. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, are you still going to be like, let's hop in the fucking convertible and...
You're making first of all, you're making the assumption that I enjoyed anything fun when I was in college.
Madeline was yelling at the 18 to 22 year olds to get back from skip day.
I can remember I drank one beer in college and I sipped it in the afternoon with my three girlfriends, Kelly, Laura, and Michelle. And I
did you guys share the beer? Did you guys have one beer?
I mean, we honestly could have. We were not fun. Laura is the doctor that sometimes calls in on this podcast. She was actually the most fun out of all of us. I shouldn't speak for everybody. I was not fun.
That's scary to me that the doctor was the most fun drunk of the...
She just like, you know, would like be like, I'm going to a party. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, I'm putting resumes together because I would like to try to get an internship.
It doesn't actually surprise me, Madeline, that you're saying this thing about how your last, like the last chapter of your life will be the one that you enjoy the most. Because you've talked about before on this podcast and just in our personal life that you really like that feeling of being just sick enough to relax.
Yes.
And it sort of seems like that's what we're not talking about about dying of some, you know, tragic and debilitating thing. We're talking about like just sort of waning into, you know, the better to burn out than to just fade away. Madeline's a fade away.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to
fading. Yeah, and that you'll be able to chill. Like at that point, no one will send you enough emails that you'll have to spend your Friday nights organizing them.
No,
and you'll just sort of be out of the loop in a good way.
Yeah, I'm planning to garden. I'm planning to wear like a wide pair of pants and Crocs all the time.
A lot of purple.
I'm going to be one of those ladies that has just a long braid and like a lot of like rocks around.
Sure. Wait, just rocks? Just rocks around? Okay, that's great.
I think I'm going to have a lot of like elective, but very useful surgeries. Like the kind where you're like by that point you can have like neck surgery just for comfort's sake. You can have like little back surgery. I mean, already at this point, like, and don't get me wrong, like anytime they put you out and then carve into your body, it's a scary situation.
Yes.
But my dad has had like several like back and neck procedures where you're out of the hospital that same day. They're just sort of, they're there for comfort's sake. You know, they maybe take some pressure off of like your spine with you know, maybe like a vertebrae is pressing on something or other, like the kinds of things that I like just this past year started having physical therapy for. I'll just start getting surgery for because I'll be too old to fight back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, in this scenario, are you fighting off doctors?
Oh, yeah.
Up to a certain point, they're like, they're attacking you and trying to give you surgery. And at
apples,
some point, you're looking
I'm
forward.
I'm whipping apples.
Right, you're whipping, you're throwing apples.
Apple a day.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking forward to heroin. Yeah. I think at some point, you know, if I make it to X, let's say 85, 90, and like I have a reasonable, like, especially my mom's side, we've got like longevity genes.
Nice. Oh, great.
My dad's less so, but you know, but yeah, like if you make it to 90, why would you not do heroin?
Right.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it. Feel great. Fade away.
Fade away. Yeah.
But yeah, and again, like, and if that scenario that you're describing, I was able to like kind of nail and just like, I'm just getting older.
Yeah.
Great. Fine.
Yeah.
I got no problem with that.
Yeah.
Like, and because I think there are a lot of great, cool old people that you can look up to.
Yeah.
And know that that is something that, get that braid, get those rocks.
Yeah.
The thing I worry about is just like, and it's honestly because I have like dementia in my family. It's like that's a thing that's very likely something that I'm going to, you know, so that is a thing that I'm legit scared about
fear. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have grandparents that are still living?
They are all passed at this point. Yeah. My last one, my grandmother made it to, so my maternal grandmother, I think made it to 98.
Wow.
I believe it's 96 or 98. There were so many years that I can't remember which, but
yeah,
there's, you know, here's a question about dying and death.
Sure.
She was one of, I think, eight sisters, eight sisters and I think a brother. She was the last one to pass.
Yes.
And I know there at the end, there was like, I wish I could get out of here because I'm the last one at the party.
Yeah.
You know, so where do you guys stand on that? Like, if you were given a choice of, you know, a few years difference, you get out while your friends are still around, or do you kind of stick around and like, hey, I'm going to kind of continue to go through this chapter, read to the end of the book, kind of, you know, and it's a strange hypothetical, but you know what I mean?
Well, I feel like this the same way I feel about like going to any party, where I always feel so much better if I like leave a little earlier than I think, because like you've had a great time with everybody. Right. Like I haven't had the chance to like talk too much to anybody, like, you know, like ramble on to anybody and then feel embarrassed about it. But that so rarely happens. I am so much more often like around kind of cleaning up and like everybody's already gone. And I feel that like my want is to get out while the going's good. But my strong feeling about what will happen is that I'm going to like just hang around until it's awkward.
Right. And I'm kind of looking forward to the Irish goodbye of life.
You're just
like, you're just, yeah, you know, like
one day Mel
don't,
is gone.
Tell everybody you're going to the bathroom and then.
Or even better, just don't say goodbye to anybody.
Yeah.
Just
right.
Like, you know, hey, where'd Mel go? Oh, he's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's I feel that sort of similar to what Madeline said, but out of a sense of obligation, I feel like I have to stay around until everyone has died and to like and I have to give the last eulogy. Like, I think that that's my job.
That's very honorable.
And to like to sort of be to be pretty cool about all the deaths, you know, to sort of to give them the philosophical perspective that they need for everyone else's sake.
Yeah.
So that they can go quietly into the night. But I would rather be the first to go.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my wife and I have a longstanding understanding that I want to die before not only her, but before my dog.
Oh,
like no, that's horrible.
Yeah,
I understand that that's a ridiculous thing. And she's just comfortable with it at this point. She's like, I know I'm going to, I'm going to have to deal with you.
I deeply hope you don't die before Gable.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
How old is Gable?
He's like 7 or 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
But even if he was a puppy, you'd be looking at dying at in 20 years?
I don't want to die before him, but I also don't want to be around when he's dead.
Yeah.
It just seems like that, like life post wife dog is just sounds kind of dumb and boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know if it happens for me to check out before then. Fine.
Well, when I get an invite from you to come to an intersection for your 40th birthday,
bus birthday bye.
Bus birthday bye bye.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. Hashtag bus birthday bye bye. And I know this actually legitimately sounds morbid, but it's more, and it actually is not like a morbid gothy, like I actually think about it a ton. It's more just, I'm selfish.
Yeah.
It's just pure selfishness.
You love your wife and you love your dog. Sure. I mean, that's, it's not even that, like, we can all put it into perspective, but I would say you shouldn't have gotten married and that you shouldn't have a dog if you felt completely the opposite, you know, like if you were just like, you two don't matter.
I can't wait for you guys to die so I can party.
Yeah. You're supposed to want to keep the things that you love for your whole life, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you get worried that you are going to die frequently?
Actually, no. I was a sick kid. I was in the hospital a bunch. Like weird lung stuff and allergies and everything.
Oh, weird.
And I don't really know the particulars, but I think I had like collapsed lungs and things like that.
Whoa.
Had allergy shots when I was a kid for like 5 years. Got over a lot of that stuff. Subsequently, I think I actually have like a pretty good immune system. So I just don't get sick that often.
Yeah.
You get your colds, get your, whatever. But it's pretty rare. Like, I don't get the flu shot, for instance. I have definitely gotten the flu, like, in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
But it's not like, oh, every year I get the flu again.
Yeah.
And I have stuck with that. I don't go to the doctor that often.
Yeah.
So what I don't think I have is, like, strong hypochondriac tendencies.
Great. Yeah.
That said, when I do, I go straight to acceptance.
Really?
I go straight to, if something weird happens, I jump right to, well, I guess I have cancer and I'm going to die. Okay. does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. But do you have a good example?
For instance, right now, I've got this thing at the back of my throat, and it's on the left side, kind of near the roof, kind of like behind my teeth, I think. And I can't even really like if I poke back there, it's not gonna be like, oh, it's that thing. But what it feels like is a popcorn kernel,
like
the skin of a popcorn
kernel. Yeah, that little shell that gets
and it just gets like stuck up there
for days.
And that thing is like sometimes, you know, if you get stuck, you just go bloop and it's gone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I can't go to bloop. Also, I haven't eaten popcorn.
Oh.
So this remains a mystery. It's not really that big of a deal. And actually, this is not necessarily a good one in the sense that, like, oh, I immediately went to, death. But what I do have on the other side of my mouth, guys, is when I was in ninth or 10th grade, I was on a family trip to Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. I had braces and woke up in the morning. Side of my cheek and like inside, I'd bitten it so badly but apparently like slept and it just woke up and it was like, this is, and I was like, man, this hurts.
Yeah.
And that's weird. And I'm sitting at our little breakfast table in the motorhome and my mom's like, oh, well, let me see it. And I still remember her look of horror when she saw what was in my mouth. And it was it's about the size of a quarter, and it was like a the worst blood blister thing you've and it was in my mouth.
And you gave it to yourself by chewing your mouth?
I guess that's what, and we went to like basically like a park ranger hospital, and she was like, I don't know what the fuck that is.
Oh, no.
And cut to like, it was there, and it kind of, you know, it healed or whatever, but to this day, if I it still will occasionally like I'll chomp it or I'll and it kind of, so now the entire side of my right mouth is scar tissue because I like fucked it up over the years.
Oh, that's crazy!
And it is a stress thing. Like it will definitely like you know, present itself when in a time of stress.
Yeah.
But that's the one where most specific. I was like, this is cancer.
Yeah.
This is a thing that is because you can like scar tissue if it's like.
Yeah.
You know, it can
develop into.
It can become cancerous. Yeah.
When did you think that was cancer?
A few years ago, went to the doctor. He was like, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But again, like I was so convinced and like ready to have cancer that I was already thinking about, okay, well, what's my face going to look like once we have this surgery to remove this obvious cancer that's in my mouth? So picturing like, okay, well, so like, how is that going to affect how I talk? Is that going to affect like performing comedy? And like, I was happily working out all the ramifications of this thing, which definitely wasn't cancer. It was just a thing that I had over and over again since I was eighth grade. But so I think that's maybe, you know, but the question is, because I've never truly gotten like super sick, what would happen then?
Yeah.
Maybe there's a part of my mind that's like, fuck off. You don't actually have cancer.
So
what I would like to believe is like, I will be very calm and rational and like keep my shit together if illness actually happens. Yeah. I don't know that that's the case.
What's the worst thing that's ever happened to you?
The worst thing physically that's ever happened
what
to me?
What is the greatest tragedy you've experienced? That you don't have to answer, but I'm curious, you know, because like I'm similar where I have not actually had a lot of like medical emergencies or illnesses. And I think that's where like a lot of my anxiety comes from. But I think it's interesting to see how you actually do behave when a bad thing happens to you.
Yeah, that's a good question. What would be I think like all the physical stuff was like when I was really little.
You know,
I did have like jaw surgery when I was 18. Like moved my jaw around because you know, my bite was gonna go crazy. Yeah. But I had like a big old underbite.
Yeah,
my face looked completely different, and that was definitely like the most traumatic physical like recovery period thing.
You can speak about an emotional trauma.
I have an amazing life, so and actually that is kind of something that I've thought about is like I don't think I've really been like tested.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, because I have such a like a perfect white privilege you know, middle class. Everything's essentially fucking perfect.
It's kind of is what we're discovering these days, though, is that we as white folks haven't super been tested.
Yeah.
No. Like, not in our lifetime, at least.
Yeah.
I mean,
every
once in a while, something will happen very specific to, you know, to the individual. A lot of the fears that I hear my fellow liberals talk about waking up with are not present in my physicality. Like, I'm aware of them intellectually. Yeah. I get why there's so many causes to be alarmed and afraid right now, and I am alarmed. But it doesn't ever manifest itself as like physical symptoms or whatever. Sort of like what you were talking about, where like stress causes me to focus on something, you know, minute, and then sort of embellish it into turn a molehill into a mountain.
I had a friend post the election who broke out in hives so bad that she was on her kitchen floor just screaming. And they lasted, I think, multiple weeks.
Oh my gosh.
They still don't know exactly what happened. They think it might have been an allergic reaction that spiraled into hives because of the,
stress,
and it was just like a perfect storm of things.
That's crazy.
But I've had the total opposite in the spectrum, like had like a very small episode of shingles.
Yeah,
it was literally
like
yay big.
Yeah.
You know, I'm holding my fingers an inch apart from each
about
other.
Like a Lego size.
About a Lego size worth of shingles. But that was and that was probably stress related and it lasted for like a week. It was no big deal. But like that shit is crazy. Like that your body can and does occasionally like rebel against you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the question I wonder how much of it is like warning signs. Is it benevolent? Is it basically like, hey, sit down.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool
out.
Relax.
You know,
yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know either. How are you with stress? Do you tend to be someone who goes to it immediately? Does it take a lot to rattle you?
I would say that probably on a scale from 1 to like totally chill, 10 being like constantly, you know, Woody Allen.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I would like to say that I'm on the more chill end.
Yeah.
But I think I do sort of run hot. Like, yeah, I think, yeah, I run like a little, my baseline is kind of always a little like hand wringy, maybe.
Sure.
Even though I don't feel like that on a, yeah, right, on, yeah, a minute, yeah, to minute or day to day basis. And I think I do tend to react fairly calmly,
yeah,
in situations.
Yeah.
But again, I think it's just because I'm always a little like,
yeah,
like my shoulders are,
you're always,
are
like always poised,
little,
and ready to go. Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know. My hackles are always kind of raised.
Yeah.
And maybe, which is like, probably not a great way to live your life.
Maybe you're right that maybe just your little Lego shingle is like your way of kind of nipping it in the bud. Your body saying like, okay, I'm going to give you the signs before this turns into anything that's like huge, because if it does get huge, you're going to go to that place that you went to regarding your dog and your wife.
Sure.
You know, they're, yeah, like, that we're going to give you just this little sign and you're going to deal with that little sign and then, mm-hmm, you're going to be free and clear from it, because if it blows out of proportion,
right,
all hell's breaking loose.
All hell's breaking loose. Yeah. I'm throwing apples at doctors.
That's right.
Yeah.
We're heading for our bus death.
We're heading for our bus birthday. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Well, it's interesting to me that you both try to be chill so much, but are so fearful of a painful old age that you would like to die decades, yeah, early.
He wants to die chill.
Yeah.
I want to die chill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Die and chill with Mel Cowan.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cheaper. We're not going to charge you $8 a month. It's just you die when you want in kind of a chill fashion. It's good. It's not even really a subscription service. It's just a
yeah,
thing
what
you
are
can
we
do.
Okay. 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 Yeah,
you're just subscribing,
like a mantra
to,
or a slogan.
Bye bye.
How do you guys deal with stress? And also,
yes,
is any of this interesting?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Great.
Yes.
It's all interesting.
This is all interesting.
Great.
Yeah, if it wasn't interesting, we would have delved right into the hat of,
oh, yeah,
hypochondria.
Hat of hypochondria.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
I would say that I think I'm pretty similar to you, that like as long as everything is like, I'm not going to invent something that isn't there. But if it gets pretty big, then yeah, I'm probably prone to stress. I didn't say that all that well. Yeah, I would say that I don't invent stress for myself. Mm. But like when it gets out of control, I'm not the one that's going to keep things chill either. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you?
I am very chill in an actually stressful situation, and I am very stressed when I should be relaxed. Mm. Like I
got it.
Like my most stressful kind of like weekday is like a Tuesday where like I'm between projects and don't have like a lot of immediate like tasks on my to-do list and have to start weeding through all like sort of the intermediate tasks that I should do and figure out like what a priority is. And that like, because like I struggle to focus. And so like decision-making is a big source of stress for me. And a lot of times in high stress moments, you have to make a decision very quickly, or your decisions are made for you because it's like you have to react to like what, you know, whatever is happening. So I'm like very bad. I'm good at like fully relaxing. Like I'm great at going on vacation. Tell you, like you'll never see me on my phone on vacation. If I know I'm on vacation, I'll sit on a towel and I won't move for a week. Mm-hmm. But that weird middle ground where it's like not, where like there's nothing to actually be stressed about. Like I will invent 100 things to like to worry about.
And it sucks because that's the, let's say that maybe 4% of your life is,
yeah,
vacation,
yes,
total relaxed.
Yeah. Yes.
Another 3% is super stressful. Maybe,
yes,
like let's say 5. So that,
yeah,
means like 90-91% is just like,
you got
I
it. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes,
yeah,
sense.
Yeah. So like I feel like I'm like always like motoring at sort of a level of like absolutely self-induced stress.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's yeah. It is. It's
no,
terrible.
I think we're probably all like that to a certain degree. Like, and do you think it's a curse of the creative class?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know. I think.
Do you think it's a curse of this sort of like weird, not that grown up way we all live our lives? For those of you who don't, where this is like 1 o'clock on a fucking Thursday when we should be at jobs.
Yeah.
We should be, you know, I don't know, driving caterpillars or mining for coal.
Yeah, we should all be doing physical labor
now. All the time. And do you think it's sort of that, like, formlessness that we, the lack of routine that many of us deal with?
But it didn't get better when I had a job. Like, I had, but I wonder if it would, but I do think the formless, well, I had a lot of thoughts at once. Interrupted myself. I feel like the formless nature of it sometimes exacerbates it, but has actually like forced me to like deal with it and develop more coping mechanisms. Mm-hmm. You know, because I feel like it just comes from. I'm saying a thing that I think is true of everybody, but maybe it's just true of me. Like, but I feel like everybody sort of always like combating a feeling that you're like. That you're not enough.
Like, sure.
Can, right?
Yeah.
Like, is that
constant
true?
Crushing feelings of inadequacy?
Yeah. Is that like, see, like, do you feel inadequate?
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about, like, tell me more about that.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're constantly lacking as a friend, husband, creative person, all of it, son,
You know, and I think something about being in a, like, because I find myself constantly putting myself in situations where I, like, don't have enough time. And I'm comfortable there because I can say, like, oh, well, I just, like, I don't have enough time to, like, be all of these things. And then I become more comfortable with my inadequacy.
You kind of have an excuse for it.
Yes. Right. How do you cope with your feelings of inadequacy?
I don't know that I cope particularly well. I think I does constantly sort of excoriating oneself count as coping?
Well, yeah, I guess because you are super self-deprecating.
Sure.
And I feel like you're the first. Sure. And I feel like whenever, because we've been friends for a long time.
Yeah.
And I feel like whenever a cool thing happens for you, which is want to do because you're like a talented and good person, I feel like I'm always like, whoa, this is great. And you're like, it's not. I mean, it's nothing. Who knows? It'll probably fall apart.
That is accurate. I do have difficulty enjoying things like that.
So I would call those like, you know, and they're probably categorically in the same world, but those feel more like defense mechanisms than coping mechanisms. Like that.
What is the difference? I said and then I realized like I.
To me, the difference would be that a coping mechanism would be a way that you came up with to help yourself deal with something, and a defense mechanism would be a way of pushing something away.
Okay,
refusing to deal with
it. A coping mechanism being something that's sort of active and like could potentially solve something or ameliorate
making it part of you, as opposed to saying, okay, these are things almost like treating it like it's something that's happened to you, and at any moment it's a good thing that happened to you, but any moment it could be a bad thing that happened to you because it's not outside of your control.
Right.
I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's
That does make a lot of sense because I think a lot of the stuff you're talking about is often like, you know, job related or industry or whatever. And I do have a hard time saying that I had any part of that.
Yeah.
Like, and I think some of it is sort of legitimate because there are so many moving parts and so many different things. That it always kind of feels like, well, look, I didn't, you know, really have anything to do with that.
Sure, but like, you know, when you like got a cool job, it's because you wrote good scripts and someone was like, I like him. And then they met you and they were like, I like him.
Yeah.
You did that.
But also these things.
Maybe.
Certainly. You can't tell because you sat. Did you write it or did a different person write it?
I guess I wrote it. I guess that means I wrote it.
But it's one of those things where, like, you know, similar to, you know, if you and your spouse get pregnant, you know, like we wait for 3 months to tell people because bad things can happen and then you've put it out into the world. And so I think in regards to the industry that we work in, that often we're, we're not even necessarily self-deprecating. We're just aware that at any moment this good thing could go away. And so until there's something that we could say, okay, look at this. This is the good thing that happened. Not just like a good thing that potentially could happen, but the good thing happened.
It's done. The check is cleared. Yeah. It happened a year ago. Exactly. Now I can talk about it.
Exactly. Yeah. And then a year passes, and then it was too good. It was too good for us to speak about up until it happened, and then it happens, and then it wasn't good enough. That it's not even worth writing home about any longer.
Sure.
That's the nature of us.
I think also it's almost like a macro thing of like wanting to have perspective about you know, mm-hmm. because what you want is longevity.
Sure.
And now we're just kind of talking about like job stuff. Right. But like you don't want it. It's not about the thing you're on. It's about the next thing that you're on. Which of course then it's like, okay, well, do you ever stop and enjoy anything? And that is actually something that I think I'm okay at is like enjoying moments and things with friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it is fucked up by like not being able to like relax as well should have or should be able to. Vacation is still like a little bit of work for me. Like I don't have that ability to completely just like great towel beach boom.
Yeah.
Partially because I've never really been on one of those like cool like we're just gonna hang out in Tulum.
No,
and,
you
like,
and Katie, I feel like always like go to a cool place and enrich your lives and like explore.
Right.
I always want to just like go to sleep. Many days in a row as possible.
Yes, that does sound good. And guys, one thing that I can tell you, I'm great at napping. I'm good at napping. So like it's not like I can't turn it off. I just have issues, and I think it is like a conglomeration of like anxiety and stress and crippling self-loathing.
I don't have that thing like that. Like I'll have moments of self-doubt, like specific to a thing, but no, the vast majority of the time I don't think I could possibly believe in myself more. I would say I'm completely the opposite of you guys in
that
respect.
Yeah, that's great.
Too much.
Does that most of the time make you feel good, or does it cause you to?
Neither. It's just sort of my baseline. Yeah. It's just. It's just life. I don't really think either way. Like it's just, you know, if I decide I'm going to do something, then eventually it's going to be done, and it may be good, it may not be good, but that doesn't really have any bearing on how I see myself.
That's wildly healthy.
That's great.
That seems
I probably fuck up a lot and then still think very highly of me.
Well, but
that
that's like that's what you're I think that's the goal. Like I've been like, because I feel like I will often like do I've been better at this lately, but like for a long time my defense mechanism was like to do so many things at once because I believed so little that any of them could actually work out. And I was like, well, I should be doing a million things then. And then it gave all of the things I was doing sort of the most minimal chance of working out because none of them got my full attention.
You're half-assing kind of everything.
Yes. Yeah.
That is so you can kind of say, well, look, I was doing these five other things at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. Yeah. Like with writing or whatever, I'm incapable of just going like, this is the one thing and I'm only working on this. Yeah. And part of that is just like I get bored with stuff easily.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Simple-minded. so like being able to like work on a few different things and actually have different. Mm-hmm. So I basically tried to convince myself that that is a strength.
Yes. Yes.
That if that's the way your brain works.
Yeah.
Don't kick yourself for it. If like, yeah, no, I like working on four different things and here are the reasons why I like doing that.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, it's almost like, what's that? What's that like CrossFit thing? Like muscle confusion?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, like, okay, great. So I'm going to, like for instance, I'm shot and directed and am currently editing a music video that I hadn't done that before and I wanted to do that, but I'm also working on two scripts at the same time. And last night wrote for 2 hours and then stayed up for another 2 hours color correcting.
Yeah.
And I liked that. Yeah. Like, great. I'm doing that and I'm doing that.
Yeah.
Versus where I used to be like, oh, why can't I just focus and get this thing
done? Yeah. Yeah.
That said, I'm also like, you know, I don't have a day-to-day job, so I can kind of make my own hours and get shit done.
Yeah.
I think that's the way the brain works, and that we either find a way to take advantage of the way that the brain works, or we have a lot of downtime where we're not even downtime. We have a lot of time where we find ourselves incapable of using the full function of our brain. In other words, like when I would spend all my time writing, I would always work on three projects at once. And I called it the three plates, balancing the three plates, that it was there's the part of your brain that should be creating. There's the part of your brain that is capable of executing. And there's the part of your brain that's capable of editorial type work, that you're either fixing something you've already done. Mm-hmm. You are executing something that you've created, or you're coming up with something new. And you don't know which part of your brain you're going to have access to from moment to moment. But if you have a project that associates with each of those parts of the brain, you can actually hypnotically take yourself from project to project, from world to world. And I think that's the healthiest way to actually, perform the sort of stuff that we do in our line of work, where no one's going to particularly motivate you. You just have to be motivated to work on what you're capable of working on at the best, or, to the best of your ability at that moment. If you try to write when you're not capable of writing, you're going to write crap. If you try to create when you're incapable of creating, you're going to create crap. Yeah. Try to edit when you're incapable of editing, you're going to edit crap.
Yeah.
But if you've got something for all those different parts of your life, all those different parts of your creative life, then you'll find that that you're never incapable of doing something. And I think that's the big thing.
Yeah.
Too often people find themselves incapable of creating something, and then they say, I've got writer's block, or I'm stifled. That's not actually the case. You're just not capable of using the part of your brain that you want to use at that moment.
Yeah.
You're trying to eat when you're not hungry.
Ben Axelrad teaches a pilot class, by the way.
That's true.
It's a very good class.
is this related enough to sickness and or death and or dying for your podcast?
I think it is, because I feel like so much of what we talk about, like, I think since we sometimes talk about real sickness, most of the time talk about imagined sickness, which so much of the time is simply related to fear and anxiety. Yeah. And I think that our jobs are at least for me, the work that I want to do is deeply connected to my fear and anxiety and sense of self-worth. So to me, this is all seamlessly connected. I know it sounds like we're talking about scripts, but I feel we are. But at the same time, it's we talked about this a little bit before on the podcast. So I'll have a hypochondriac flare up before I have to shoot something, and it'll absolutely just be because I'm scared of not preparing. And and if I were, here's another thing. If I were to get hit by a bus on my way to a job, I wouldn't feel bad about it at all. But if I went to to shoot something and had a cold, I would beat myself up about it, because I would be it's your fault. You didn't take care of yourself well enough. You're not prepared.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. See, because I definitely do get either a stomach or a cold thing.
Yeah.
When you get to wake up early to get to a shoot or something like that. But I don't go beyond and beat myself up. That's really interesting.
I would beat myself up for getting sick.
I just be like, I don't want to be here. This sucks.
No, I'd be like, this is your fault. You should have went to bed earlier. Wow. You should have drank more juice. That's the self-loathing side of my hypochondria. Is I'm never the victim of it. I'm always the perpetrator. It's deeply linked to me being worried that I've brought it up. I've reduced my ability to work by not taking care of myself appropriately.
Wow.
Yeah.
I do remember one time where I definitely it was before a shoot, and I'd stayed up late, super early call, and also was kind of sick, and then got three different sets of directions from different people that were in charge of it, and to this day feel like, oh, I fucked that up. I can't watch the thing that it is.
I won't tell. Tell us.
But they cut around me. How confused and cold medicine-y I was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was something that I really would have liked to have been awesome.
Good at, yeah.
Yeah, and everything else is gone perfectly for me. There's just that one job. No.
Well, but you're fine. You don't think about that a lot, do you? Do you think about that a lot?
How often is it a lot?
How often do you think about that job?
I'm thinking about it right now. That is something that's true. I'm not good at remembering moments that worked. I'm only like whether it's usually like performance stuff, but like I don't remember. That's not true. I can think of like two times on stage with like Sentimental Lady.
Yeah.
Where I was like, I remember that. That was funny.
Didn't you
like,
say something about Cheeto dust once and it was very funny?
I don't remember that.
Maybe you didn't tell me this story. Maybe somebody else told me a story about
Cheeto dust?
A line that you had about Cheeto dust that killed. Okay. I think somebody else probably told me about it. It's not important.
No, that's great to hear. But I remember every single bad moment or scene. Every single that makes me sound like a crazy person. But it I've got a lot in the chamber.
Yeah.
To think about, and I think with improv, and now we're just fully being improv douchebags.
Yeah.
But it's you're either on a team or in a scene with it, like bombing as a stand-up is one thing. It's like, hey, I bombed as a stand-up.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But I'm the only one who looks like an asshole.
Yeah.
Right.
As an improviser, you get in your head, it makes it worse because of like, I've made this scene shitty for this person and this team.
Yeah, you're like,
because I'm on a team with a lot of great people, that is a huge source of neurosis. Like, there are so many times driving to Sentimental Lady practice where I was like, I should quit. I should quit. Because I'm bringing these very good people down. But again, Cheeto dust, I have no recollection.
Well, you did something legendary about Cheeto dust.
Legendary.
I've gotten better only at, like, improv. I used to only remember the bad things I did, and now I read 10 pages of this book about tennis that's supposed to make you better at everything. And one of the things, have you ever read The Inner Game of Tennis?
No, I'm curious about it.
Have you ever, has
like
anybody read
things.
The, it's an old book. It's probably, maybe not as relevant anymore, but maybe it is, but it's like a classic, like sports psychology self-help book that has been like used outside of sports. I think my dad ordered it for me when I was bombing so hard on my first Harold team, Bangarang. I just bombed over and over and over again. And I was talking to my parents a lot because, you know, it was like they're like excited to hear how everything was going. And the answer was always bad. And my dad sent me this book and I read the beginning of it and then kind of got bored. But one of the really interesting and useful things about it was like just retraining your brain to like remember the good times, like, and just making, you know, and just kind of making a conscious effort, like, after every tennis game to like, you know, just to truly let it go, to like not replay any moments in your mind. And like,
which is necessary because you lose every tennis game.
Yeah.
You're terrible at tennis.
Yeah.
I am terrible at tennis, but I feel legendarily bad at tennis. And that
is like a really good point. And I think actually just on the improv end of things, like I'm kind of now to the point where, like, as I've been with Cinema Lady so long, like, we've had far more good shows to, like, kind of build that up.
Yes, yeah.
And so, like, I mean, I enjoy every second of it. It's always fun. And I think my, like, long game version of it is now, like, I feel like I'm more in the positive than negative, which is good. But every week I think about Definitely Dying podcast guest Nick Weiger, and our 401 grad show, when I just, it's just the worst. It's just the worst scene I just did. And what I did, and this is as a teacher, ACB, this is the shame. It's a shameful thing. Nick was great. He was a very funny member of the class, and I jumped out and I pointed at him. And I bullied it.
It was like, boom,
you're getting
and
in the scene.
And it wasn't even for like a callback or a character. It was just because you wanted to do
a scene with Nick. Very talented Nick Weiger. And I legitimately, I'm apologizing to him on this podcast now because
I keep
thinking I need to at some point go, hey, Nick, I know you've been beating yourself up about this for a long time too. So let's clear the air. I could say that and he would be like, I have no recollection of that, whereas I relive it on a weekly basis.
I can't believe you remember doing that. I don't remember. I remember one class show scene. No, I remember two class show scenes I ever did, but that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not my proudest moment.
No.
Yeah.
I only did one, and I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, that's great.
And you were great, right?
You were great. Great. Killed it. Killed it. Self-confident about everything.
Broke all the rules of teamwork.
Decided to do a great scene, so did it.
I remember walking away from it and being like, and having the self-aware thought that how badly I wished I had written everyone's dialogue for it, and then being like, okay, you don't need to do any more improv. You're just not made for it. Like, they did a great job. You thought you were the funniest, but you were just lying to yourself and you wanted to rewrite everyone's dialogue and probably kind of did that on stage. Like, didn't rewrite their dialogue, but changed the scene to the one that you wanted. And thought, sure. Hey, why is everyone patting on my back for saving these scenes? And then, no, they don't want you in 200.
Why is everyone patting me on the back for saving these scenes? That's a deep cut thing for those of you who do not do improv. But what they were doing in that case was tapping him on the back to get him out of the scene. Ben has chosen to. You're welcome. Yeah, that's right. I'll just keep going on with this amazing scene. You're welcome. But yeah, no, keep the praise coming.
Appreciate that, Steven. I'm going to keep slaying out here, but you go back to that back wall.
Yeah, you just hang out back there. Yeah. Daddy's in charge.
Yeah. Don't know why the other seven of you showed up tonight.
It's weird. I mean, I'm happy to write dialogue for all seven of you.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, I'm ready to do three plates. I can do seven plates, too. Each one of you is a plate I'm juggling with a different part of my mind.
Now that's improv I can get behind. Mel, you want to play a quick game with us?
I would love to play a game.
Nice. So this game is called Genie in a Pill Bottle. Okay. So you open up a medicine cabinet.
Look, I wish you could see this. This is the most delighted I've ever seen Ben Axelrod. He's so delighted with the half pun of Genie in a Pill Bottle. I feel like pun is generous, but he is so happy. He's alive. He's glowing over getting to say, it's called Genie in a Pill Bottle.
I believe in me.
I believe in you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Guys, take his pilot writing workshop. He thought of the pun, Genie in a Pill Bottle. Can you imagine what you'll learn if you take an 8-week course with him?
It's true.
It's true. Take the class.
It's very true.
Don't you won't be able to.
No! It's true. It's selling out very fast.
Yes, very sold out. So you get three wishes in the form of genie pills, and they have to be pertaining to some either medical or health-related sort of phenomenon. Like you say, for instance, that like this pill means that I will never get a headache again, or this pill means that I'll have perfect abdominal muscles or whatever. It could be anything, but it can't be like, you can't just like invent it. Like it couldn't be like a situation like I'm going to pee gravy because we don't pee gravy. You could say I would have the. Maybe you pee gravy.
Are you
do you want
pee gravy?
Yeah.
Do you pee?
I thought at some point we were going to talk about the fact that I pee gravy. Medical questions. I was just waiting for the appropriate time, but you brought it up. Anyway, good.
Okay.
I'll follow up with
very
you.
Very worried. Write me an email.
Got it. Great.
Yeah. We'll go around and we'll say
fanciful genie stuff aside, you're picking three things that you could cure yourself of.
Yeah.
Got it.
Or make better, if something that isn't hurting, but you just want to be perfect, you know, like you could say the perfect, I want the perfect genitalia. I feel like no one's going to answer that because it feels a little cheap. Madeline, I don't know, you're looking at me like you might want perfect genitalia.
Real smooth and metallic, right, guys? That's like the platonic ideal. Like something like you want a dick like a speedboat.
Yeah. And it's like I've always felt like mine didn't come directly off an assembly line, and that's been a problem for me.
Yeah.
So yeah,
you see the seams. I don't want to do that.
No. Right. Wait.
It's gross.
That's where all the gravy comes pouring out. Okay, Mel.
Yeah, follow-up question. I think I have a very poorly put-together penis. We're going to need to talk to the factory about that.
So we'll start with you. You can just do the first one, and then
based on stuff I've already talked about, I think the first easy thing for me would be no dementia. I'm curing, no I'm curing myself of any kind of future mental incapacitation.
Yeah. Always sane of mind for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, that's Madeline, great. What's your first one?
Can I take that one?
Yeah, I mean, you can.
I mean, I'm actually going to take that one because that's a great answer.
And to be clear, I also really love the way Madeline described kind of her ideal aging, which I think it is, like, there is something kind of to that, like, you're slowing down in what I think is a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, they're, you know, if you think about old people who are good at being old,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's great. And it's fun to spend time with them and everything.
Yeah.
So even getting like a little like, oh, I don't remember everything quite as sharply as it, I don't give a shit about that. What I don't want is like true senility. I don't want to, do all those sad things like not be able to recognize the people you love or be a burden to them. It's right. obvious stuff like that. I'll be fine with like occasionally getting a little confused about the days of the week.
That's charming.
You know,
it's a great excuse to get out of a lunch you don't want to go
Absolutely.
To.
Also, just
senior
like,
moment.
You're retired. What's the difference between a Monday, a Tuesday, a Wednesday, a Thursday, a Friday?
Who gives a shit?
Yeah. So yeah. Okay. So a couple of just chill silver foxes.
Sure. Sure.
Just enjoying their. What do you call
the twilight years?
The twilight years. Yeah. Enjoying those twilight years. Thank you. Yeah, that is a good one.
Yes.
I'm not going to take it because I think I'll be super cute with senility.
I think that I could see you being a real a real delight.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like that's when that's when a lot of my my genie in a pill bottles are gonna be like truly appreciated. Right now, I feel like I'm a little young to be spouting them. But
you're ahead of your time.
They'll be like, he remembered something.
Yeah,
right. Something. Genie in a pill bottle. It's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna. I'm never gonna gain weight. Like I'm gonna hit like a perfect. Fighting weight and no more.
Oh
no matter
gosh,
what I do.
That's a great one.
I'm not gaining any. No more fat. I'm gaining no fat.
It's great.
Okay. So we each got one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel, number two.
So we're not doing the gravy thing. Okay.
In your case, you could say, I wish my dick would stop being gravy.
It's weird. I had the dementia one. Like because I've like thought about the hypothetical, and I only gave myself one hypothetical. I was like that's the one.
Mm-hmm.
So past that, I don't know. I actually don't know
no,
if I have any
hard.
Have anything.
If you don't take the wish, the genie will eat
the
you.
The genie eats me. Got it. Okay.
You gotta take your wish.
So I guess I'm gonna go for something like I want to be like 60s era Paul Newman. Like lean.
Okay.
Like lean and jack. I don't want to be like fucking swole.
Yeah.
Right.
But you go back, like, look at Paul Newman and like Cool Hand Luke and tell me that that's not like the platonic ideal of the way a dick should look.
Right. Right.
Like he's like he's a speedboat of a man. I mix my metaphors, but I think everybody understands.
Lean, mean, fighting machine, Mel.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, if we're just throwing wishes around, why the fuck
we definitely do.
Madeline,
do you want to look like 60s era Paul Newman as well?
Yes.
it's an unassailable look. Like,
I think I would like to stop peeing because it really takes too much time.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy it.
So
okay.
In the,
I pee too much.
In the scenario in which you stop peeing, you're still getting all of the whatever
I'm still hydrated.
The toxins
you're
are
still,
okay.
You've figured out another way.
My pee just goes into my bladder and disappears.
Oh, okay, nice.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I think that's definitely allowed. Yeah,
okay.
I just wondered where the bad stuff in pee was going.
Yeah, I keep.
Just one of those.
Snap.
And it was
so literally snap out of the pee.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, got to pee.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
Get back to Settlers of Catan.
That would be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Snap pee. Okay.
Yeah.
Lean Mean Fighting Machine, Mel. Snap P, Madeline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for Ben's number two, I am going to go with no more headaches. No headaches ever again.
No headaches is great.
Yeah.
No headaches is great.
And And I think that that would allow me to get dehydrated sometimes, which I don't want to get dehydrated.
Oh, yeah.
But I know that, like,
that's an interesting point, though, because, like,
because that's like the worst
is
part
a warning
of it.
Sign,
yeah.
Sure. And or maybe like, you'd accidentally get dehydrated, and worse things would happen.
Yeah,
my worst allergies are to like artificial sweeteners and beer, and they both give me these like massive headaches. Yeah. That like they're so bad that I end up vomiting.
Yeah,
Jesus.
So yeah, so that would go away. Yeah. It wouldn't be like the worst thing in the world if I drank like a Diet Coke, which it currently not the worst thing in the world, but it's like. Yeah. Pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's a day ruiner for sure.
Oof.
Jeez.
Okay. So no headaches, lean mean fighting machine, no peeing.
Yeah. Right. For three, I think I would go with like no stomach upsets ever again. But I guess I would like qualify as like maybe just get rid of all my allergies.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think,
oh, that's good.
I don't know which is better because but either way, the point is being able to eat whatever you want, whenever you want, and not really have to worry about it. And not that I really do worry. Like, I actually, I do eat virtually everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to completely not have that as a worry, I think would, that like, the same way, like, you know, with beer or, you know, you just, great. Yeah. It's off your plate in terms of worrying about it. You can live your life free of that little bit of anxiety. And I think that, but like because particularly like food is such a obvious part of your life, but like it's obvious, you know, it's part of culture, and you do like it. It's we also live in a great food city. You can just do it all the time.
Totally.
I think would be I think that'd be nice.
Definitely,
yeah,
definitely. So wait, what did we land on? No stomach aches or no allergies?
I guess it's a tough one. I'm just gonna give myself a perfect gut.
Oh, that's great.
That's
great.
Perfect gut.
Because
that's great.
Because I feel like that's, you know, with all the stuff about like gut bacteria, affecting your stress levels and affecting your mood. If I've got a perfect gut that can just take anything, then that probably would just like shake down to like solving basically probably all my problems.
Yeah. That's what some people say.
I feel like they're like, gut is everything.
Have you guys talked about poop transplants on the
poop transplants?
Fecal transplants.
No.
I don't think we have.
Google it, guys.
We will.
Zigzag.
So I launched into that with very little knowledge. I have not gone down this rabbit hole probably as much as I should. But technically, there's a growing body of research that suggests that much of your basic personality traits down to medical issues are related to your gut, bacteria in your gut, and one of the experimental treatments that has been utilized at this point is taking essentially what amounts to healthy gut bacteria and just like poop, feces, and putting it in the body of someone who has a less than healthy gut. So it's essentially it's poop transplants.
Saw that on Tig Notaro's Amazon show. I feel like it's not interesting. You should watch it. It's a great show.
Okay.
It's really fun. There's something about poop transplants in it.
Huh. Never heard of them.
Yeah, One Mississippi. It's great.
Oh, no. Poop transplants. Oh. I've heard of One Mississippi.
That feels like we were branded. And
have you guys heard about this new Amazon Studios TV show, One Mississippi?
One Mississippi.
That's actually how I count when I'm trying to make my poops come out. Because I have a little bout of constipation currently. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. Like that. That's like roughly how it goes.
Just three seconds and then a torrent. An aggressive torrent.
I feel like
we
should just end on that.
Just skip our last two. My last wish would be that goes away. Like, make it at least four seconds.
Sorry. To be realistic, you need that four Mississippi, and then it's.
My last is a tie between no bunions and no cancer.
Okay.
Madeline, do you legitimately have bunions?
Oh, yeah, baby.
You are an old lady trapped in a lovely young woman's body.
I know. That's why I switched exclusively to, like, running shoes, and then I wanted to get a cool pair of sneaks, and I like them, but they're exacerbating the bunions.
I don't even actually know what a bunion is.
It's when you get a big old lump on the side of your toe. Your toe kind of, like, starts, it looks like your toe sort of sliding out of its socket.
Oh, that's
so.
It's
horrifying.
Terrible. Yeah.
So your tie is no more bunions and never get cancer.
Yeah, and, okay, and cool. have the my bunions are really like they're almost not noticeable, but like I gotta wear comfortable shoes for the rest of my life or they'll get bad. So like to never to be able to wear whatever shoes I want,
sure,
look as fresh as I want without fresh getting bunions.
Madeline Walter loves looking fresh. These toes are holding him back.
Yeah, truly.
These toes are holding one Mississippi, two Mississippi.
my last wish will be Mel, yours made me think of this. A perfect internal clock, because I realized that like how much I cause my own stress by being late for things because I'm not aware of how much time it's either going to take to get to a place or just being unaware. Okay, let's be honest. Being a little too stoned and forgetting that I had to leave the house sometimes.
Sure.
And
sure.
So just like I think if I was always on time for everything. And not just like arriving on time, but feeling like I've allotted enough time that I would have no more stress.
That's interesting, the idea of being on time, but not necessarily feeling like you were on time. You just want to be like 15 minutes early, like you've parked 15 minutes early, and you're not rushing anywhere. Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm arriving exactly the minute that I'm supposed to arrive, but I always have that sense of calm that you have when you're 15 minutes early.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that sense of calm that you have, because we live in Los Angeles. Well,
that could just be fixed with the aforementioned weed.
Oh, that's true.
Just be calm. Like just be calmly smoking weed. Everywhere while you're driving. This man, like, I'm late as shit, but I feel calm.
I feel on time.
That's your genie in a pill bottle. You know what I'm saying?
It is, yeah. So,
I'm on Ben time, baby. Yeah.
My genie has a prescription these days in California.
Mel, do you want to tell people how to find you on the internet or at your home, or like anything you want to plug?
Yeah.
You
okay. My address is
here's
my
letter.
Social. No, I think I'm on Twitter at I am not Mel Cowan.
Mm-hmm.
I think my
confusing.
Instagram. Yeah, I know. It's fun. I think my Instagram is the same. Mm-hmm. Do people do other things?
Any plugs? Anything
any
you want to check out?
No, that show is coming up. I think the premiere date is March 5th. It's
cool.
It's a soapy hour long Hollywood
wait.
Drama,
nice.
So which I'm excited to see.
Nice. Say the name again.
It's called The Arrangement.
Nice.
Come see Sentimental Lady at 7 o'clock on Saturday nights at UCB. We're at UCB Franklin.
As good as they get.
Yeah.
Look forward to seeing you.
Thank
Hear
you, Mel.
About some
Thank
Cheeto
you
dust.
So much. Yeah, yeah. I would love to know what that was because I genuinely have no recollection of it. But thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you,
Mel.
This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Definitely Dying.
Until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.